Hey there, welcome to the show. Welcome to Gaming Steve. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker. And in this week's show, we talk about the latest gaming news, as usual. Then in Game Talk, we talk about what everyone's been talking about, the Xbox 360 pricing. I'm sure you guys have heard a lot about it, but it's I'll tell you a little bit of insider dirt on this one. Then in Spore Talk, I talk a little bit about Spore. I got some stuff. And Quick Takes. So actually, no reviews this week. Instead, I'm going to be doing quick takes on Advance Wars Dual Strike for the DS and the 10 Dogs for the DS. Because both of these games, I really haven't played enough to really give them full reviews, I feel. So I'm going to give you guys quick takes and give you overviews of the games and what I think so far. In my retro review, like the quick takes, instead of doing one retro review, I'm going to be doing two retro reviews, one for Military Madness for the TurboGrafx-16, and the other one is The Little Computer People for the PC. Both games are pretty much legendary at this point. Name That Game contest will announce this week's winner and do another one next week. Then I'm going to have some show mail. That's right, I have some email that people have been sending me with some good questions this week. And then our final thoughts. So, just to give you guys a little housekeeping item, there's actually going to be a huge, huge change to the show coming up. It wasn't obviously this week. It's probably going to be for the next show. I doubt it'll be... It's either going to be the next show or the show after. I'm pretty sure we'll get it done by the next show. It's something I've been working on for several months with somebody, and I think you guys are going to like it, and the show is really going to hit the next level quite a bit with this new stuff that we're going to be adding. I think you guys are going to like it. It's the content and the structure of the show isn't going to change majorly, but there's going to be some big, big, big additions to the show, as you guys are going to find out, and I think everyone's really going to like it. So with that out of the way, let's get right into the gaming news. Actually, I found out you guys really like the gaming news, and so I've actually added... I actually have a stack here. It's quite thick, so let's see how quickly I can get through it. I think I've tripled the amount of news I normally cover. So we'll go in chronological order, starting from... Actually, it's about 2 weeks ago, but going forward. Game Boy Micro is coming September 19th in the U.S. So that's right, Nintendo is releasing the Game Boy Micro for $19.99 and shipping it on September 19th. And there's going to be two versions, one black, one silver. For those of you who don't know what this is, it's a Game Boy Advance that is a little bit smaller than an iPod Mini. It's only 2.8 ounces. It's 4 inches by 2 inches by 0.7 inches. I actually covered it when I went to E3, and there's pictures of me holding it in my hand. And let me tell you, I don't really have big hands. This thing is so unbelievably tiny. I mean, a lot of people looked at it and they said, you know, you can make that into a cell phone. And that actually would be an amazing thing if you could have a cell phone with a Game Boy Advance in it, because I always carry around my cell phone. So, and, you know, the Game Boy Advance, it's a shame because the Game Boy Advance cartridges are a little too big probably, but the Nintendo DS cartridges are so small. I mean, have you seen, they're basically slivers of plastic. I mean, they're so unbelievably small. I was actually wondering where the heck the save games go. I mean, I know where they go, but you know, they look at these things and you're like, Jesus, these things are unbelievably tiny. But yeah, if the Game Boy Micro really is small, it's very cool. I mean, almost everyone out there, I just wonder how many Game Boys do you really need? Because I have the original Nintendo Advance, and then the Nintendo Advance, what was it, DS or whatever it was called. And then now there's the Nintendo DS. And so this will be, what, my third Game Boy Advance that I'm going to purchase. But you know what? It's so damn cool, and it's so small that, yeah, you know what? I am going to purchase it. So... call me crazy. Anyhow, there's going to be two versions, one black, one silver, and they're going to have faceplates that come off, as well as screen protectors and such. So it's pretty cool. There's different types. There's like a ladybug theme. There's a flame pattern, camouflage design, all that sort of stuff. So every type of Game Boy Advance cover you can think of is going to be coming out for this thing. So, you know, it's just really sort of a... you know, it's one of those items that really comes out almost like a reflex item that you buy, you know, those things that you buy in the stores that are put right near checkout, and they're called impulse items or reflex or basically impulse items. You just see them, you're like, oh my God, I got to buy some candy or something. This is the gaming equivalent of an impulse item. It's like, you know what? You don't really need this. You probably have 15 Game Boy Advances and you don't really need a 16th, but this one's so damn cool, you might as well get it, and it's really not that expensive. And you know it's going to go down in price. So after Christmas, it'll probably go down to $79.95 instead of $99.99. So, you know, it's a little expensive, but oh, it's so damn cool. I got to get it. Anyhow, New Zelda won't be seeing Twilight until 2006. The new Zelda game, Twilight Princess, was supposed to be coming out 2005, and this was obviously one of the biggest games of the year. And, of course, it's missing its ship date. Well, it's not really missing its ship date. It's actually going to be released no sooner than April 1st, 2006, which is, by the way, the beginning of Nintendo's next fiscal year. Now, those of you who listen to my show a lot realize that I talk about this quite a bit, is that game releases are timed around fiscal years. That is when games come out. That's why games come out at the end of the month, so they can stagger between two quarters. And, you know, this Zelda game, I'm sure it's done or close to being done. And Nintendo decided they need, you know, if you think about it, if they're not coming out with the Revolution for a while and they don't have any really big games coming out, and Xbox 360 is going to be out and PlayStation 3 is going to have a lot of press, they really need something huge for next year, and this is their big, huge thing. So, you know, that doesn't really surprise me, and I'm be stunned if they don't do this with a couple of their other games, because they're going to need money for next year. So, again, this happens all the time. This is why Rockstar releases their games in October, because it's between their fiscal quarters, October, November. They sort of have a strange cycle for their quarters, but that's why they release them. So this way you can get money in two quarters. And these are public companies, so they have to always be showing profit. EA does this all the time. That's why Battlefield 2 was delayed, because they wanted to push it into another quarter. So, you know, whenever you want to see when games are going to come out, it's the end of quarters, the end of months. The end of March is actually infamous for having tons of games coming out. So, anyhow, what else? Ah, the Xbox 360 pricing revealed. Yes, everyone knows this right now, but the core system is, which comes with the Xbox 360 console, the wire controller, detachable faceplate, the Xbox Live Silver membership, and standard AV cables, is $299. Both, that's $299 and €299. The Xbox 360, which is the real system, notice that's called the Xbox 360. I'll talk about that more later. It's $399. That comes with the 360 console, the hard drive, wireless controller, the headset, the high definition cables, Ethernet cable, the remote control, but that's for a limited time, detachable faceplate, and the Live Silver membership. And of course, everyone's screaming and yelling, saying, okay, you guys lied to us, and a lot of people are very, very angry about this pricing. So let's save that one. I'm putting that on the side, because we're going to talk about that one a little later. So what else? I got a whole bunch of good game releases. Caesar is coming back to the PC. After a seven-year hiatus, the Caesar series, the Roman city-building games, will be released for the PC once again. I can't believe Caesar 3 came out 7 years ago. Oh my God. Caesar, for those of you who have never played this game, is a city-building game. And it's along the same lines as the Zeus series, as well as the Pharos series. And basically, you just build the cities. But there's interaction between the cities, because you have to, you know, to build up, for instance, really prosperous areas, you have to have merchants and things like that. You have to have merchants and artistic areas and libraries and firemen and policemen nearby. And depending on, you know, how well structured your city is, you know, some areas will be poor, some areas will be rich, and then your population has to be happy, so you have to build theaters, things like that. So it's sort of like Sim City, but in the era of Caesar. So, and plus, it's so cool. I mean, you build, like, aqueducts, you build coliseums. You have a Roman army. Actually, there's fighting in it. The fighting's okay, but this is one of those rare games, and I can only count on maybe two hands games in which I just could not stop playing, and I actually played them until there was every ounce of gaming left out of them. And Caesar 3 was one of those games. I actually bought every magazine that had the demo of Caesar 3 because they were slightly different. The CD was slightly different in all the magazines and the download version. And I would just keep playing. There was only like one or two levels over and over and over and over again. And I mean, I just loved these games. So it might not seem like that big a deal. I love these games. Very excited about this. The game looks fantastic from what I've seen. It's in full 3D. And right now, I mean, Rome is actually, you know, I don't know. I think it's very, very cool. Actually, I've been watching the new Rome series on HBO. And, you know, it just has this amazing flavor. It's just sort of like that. But definitely, you know, definitely check into this one. It's not going to be coming out till the fall of 2006. But if you'd like, those of you, I know there's a ton of people on that listen to the show that are really big Sims fans and Sim City fans. You know what? Check these games out. I mean, they're actually been out for a while. Zeus is... There's actually three. There's Caesar 3, there's Pharaoh and Zeus, and that's made by the same group. That was made by a company called Impressions. They don't exist anymore, but the company was reformed as Tilted Mill Entertainment. It's the same company, basically. The same people. And they're making Caesar 4. So check those games out. Of all those, I would recommend Zeus. That one stands up the best, and it's an excellent game. You could probably find it for $9 or something. You can even go to the website and download some of these versions for free. Zeus was an excellent game. It was really cool. You actually had the gods come down and visit your city. And, you know, Dionysus would walk around and drink wine and stuff. These games are fun. They're so much fun. I love these games. And you know what? You learn a lot. In fact, I actually played the Zeus game before I went to Greece. And it sounds weird, but I actually knew a whole bunch of things just by playing these games. So there you go. Games are educational. Jack Thompson, you see. So, what else? NFL, Madden NFL tackles the sales charts. Oh, that's right. EA is going nuts. Oh, yes. Everyone voted with their wallets, and they sold 1.7 million copies of NFL Madden 2006, the first week. Yes, they voted with their wallets, and it was the best-selling game of all time. Because why? Well, because it's the end of a product life cycle, so everyone, there's almost 100 million PlayStation 2s out there, and 35 million Xboxes, and 35 million or 30 million Nintendos out there. So, yeah, of course this thing sold a lot. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it's the only football game out on the market. Now, I'm not a big football fan. I mean, actually, I am a fairly big football fan. I'm not a big football player fan. I actually like the hockey games a lot more. I like the kind of the faster games. But, you know, I used to play the NFL Madden, but not so much anymore, so I'm not qualified. However, my buddy, Jason in Pittsburgh, I've been talking to him, and he is a monster Madden fan. I mean, this guy actually plays full seasons. He posts incredibly detailed reports of how well he does on websites. I mean, this guy is hardcore. And he said it was pretty blah. And I've actually heard that. I've heard mixed things. I've heard some people really like it, but I've heard a lot of people say it's sort of eh, you know, it's sort of an okay version. They actually stole a huge amount from the Take-Two series from last year. They took a whole bunch of their features and put it in. So, and I actually was at the store, and I actually heard, not just once, but twice, I actually heard people complaining, you know, out loud. They were complaining to the sales guys. They were really pissed that there was no, you know, there was no other football game out there. And I keep thinking, you know, I mean, everyone was up in arms because, you know, this is a NFL, you know, they sold these rights for approximately $300 million to EA. Now we're all screwed because it's the only version. But can you imagine, oh my God, can you imagine if Take-Two got the exclusive license and not EA? I mean, everyone would be going crazy right now. I mean, they would still be a little upset, but in a different way. They'd be upset, and at the same time, everyone would be reminiscing about how Madden is dead and it's gone forever, and, you know, we can't, you know, it's just sad, and but yet this game is so good, and it's time for a new era. So instead, we're saying up now it's the 16th year of the franchise, and they sold more than 45 million copies in total. But you know what? It's a huge game. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that do nothing but buy PlayStations and Madden, and that's it. And I know a lot of people. I have some of my non-gamer friends. That's what they have. They have an Xbox because they hear the Xbox is cool. They have Madden and maybe one other or two other sports games, maybe Halo, but that's it. I mean, that's all they have. That's their entire collection, and they just keep buying Madden every year because, you know what? That's what they like. They like it, and they just keep playing it over and over again. And, you know, some of the hardcore gamers, I'm sure a lot of you guys aren't like that out there, but that's a majority of the population, not us. We're not the majority, unfortunately. Star Wars Galaxies has been imploded and restored. For those of you who are interested in this, Star Wars Galaxies was going to publish this new update. It was going to be called Publish 22 Update is what they call it, the Publish 22 Update. I didn't make up that name. The update actually contained a huge number of changes, and one of the big changes was the way experience was doled out to players for a kill, and reduced it quite a bit. So, according to what I was reading, that you would have to play 4 hours every single day for 4 years to become a Jedi. That is how crazy this was. I mean, I guess maybe it was. I don't know how easy it is to become a Jedi in the game. I read about that one person who became a Jedi a long time ago. I actually did not play this game really at all. I've seen people, I've like stood over people's shoulders playing this game. I love Star Wars. I can go on and know just about everything there is to know about Star Wars, but at the same time, I probably cannot tell you that much about this game because I didn't play it, and for some reason, it just didn't appeal to me whatsoever. I don't know why. I'll be honest, the Star Trek online game, that appeals to me. I think that would actually be pretty interesting. But this just didn't seem to appeal to me. And anyhow, they were going to be making all these horrible changes, according to them. There was actually a discussion thread on the topic in the forums that pushed over 300 pages with over 7,500 posts in like 2 days. So instead of making these massive number of changes to really make the game much, much slower, they relented and they're not doing it. So those of you playing Star Wars Galaxies, rejoice. Halo goes Hollywood in 2007. So if you guys remember, this is in the news. I also covered this. I was toying with coming out with the Movie Steve podcast because that's one of my other loves is movies. Love movies quite a bit. Love them, love them, love them. And I've been following this one too. Basically, this was a big hubbub because Halo, Microsoft was trying to sell the Halo script. They had guys dressed up in the Halo uniforms go to all the major motion studios, major picture studios, except for Sony, of course. They snubbed them. Went to everyone and said, you got a chance to read the script right then and there. You had to give it back to the guy dressed in the Halo suit, dressed as Master Chief, and then you had 24 hours to bid on it. And the initial reports, the software giant was asking for $10 million against 15% of the gross, whichever was higher, a below the line budget of $75 million, which means that's the amount of money you have to dedicate to the movie before hiring any actors or crew. And let me tell you, that's where most of the money goes, is actors and crews could be $75 million right there. And they needed the movie to be done immediately and to be out in time for when the PlayStation 3 was supposed to launch later next year. And they also wanted to have complete creative control in the movie. So basically, everyone laughed in their face and said, you guys are nuts. And the weird part I found is this: Microsoft's so freaking rich. I mean, this is a company that makes $1 billion every 3 weeks. Okay? $1 billion. All right? They could finance this thing. They could have lunch and come back and have the money to finance 5 Halo movies. I mean, it's crazy. Anyhow, they basically negotiated with Fox and Universal. They are paying Microsoft $5 million against 10% of the gross. Universal is going to oversee production and domestic distribution, while Fox is going to handle the overseas distribution. The Bungie employees have extensive consultation on the movie. They won't have final decisions, but they could extensively consult with the people. And the movie is slated to come out in the summer of 2007. So It'll be interesting to see if Halo 3 is going to come out with the movie in 2007. Is Halo 3, some people were rumored it's going to come out with the Xbox 360. I doubt it highly. That now it's rumored it's going to come out and the same day as the PlayStation 3. Who knows? I will tell you right now, I don't know. I mean, Microsoft is very good at getting a lot of press for Halo. Halo 1, I thought, was a very good game. Halo 2, yes, blasphemy. The non-multiplayer version was pretty blah, in my opinion. And yes, okay, I'm going to probably get tons of hate mail. But you know what? The Emperor has no clothes on. Halo 2 was a lot, was very similar to Halo 1. It had so many similar elements. There was pop-in like crazy in the graphics. All over the place there was pop-in. I don't know. It was good, but it was not the next coming of the game. And I actually know a ton of my friends who never even finished the first one. And I had to like force myself to actually finish the game. And of course, there's no ending. I mean, I don't know. I personally hate games that have no endings or no resolutions. If you want to have a cliffhanger, fine, but at least finish the game that we're playing and then do a cliffhanger. Don't do some ambiguous, crazy, mixed up stuff. But yes, the multiplayer is awesome. But you know what? There's a lot of multiplayer games out there. This is not the only multiplayer game. I can jump on my PC, and I got half a dozen excellent multiplayer shooters that I can play. Anyhow, back to news. The government steps up limits on online gaming. This is actually pretty monstrous that the Chinese government is going to regulate the number of hours that people in China can play. You're basically only going to be able to play online games for no more than 5 hours a day. After 3 hours, the system cuts the game character's ability by half, whatever that means. And after 5 hours, it reduces the game character's ability to the lowest level possible. So I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, but basically, you will not be able to sit and just grind. And you know what? I can see why. I mean, this is extremely draconian, but it is Chinese government, which is communist, so they can do this. There's a lot of problems with China right now. I mean, there's a lot of people that do online gaming. I mean, you've read, there's been stories of people who go to these internet cafes. You see, it's different in China and in other Asian countries. They don't have computers. They don't own them. They actually go to cafes where all these games are pre-installed. World of Warcraft, Lineage 2, Blade Online, Mu, Legend of Mirror 2, all these games. They're already installed, and then what you do is you use your character name, and you log in, and that's how you play. And there's been people that have been dying. There was a couple. I mean, this is horrible. I mean, I feel bad. There was a couple that actually left their kid, their baby at home, went to go play, I think it was WoW, or maybe it was Lineage 2. They actually went to go play, and their kid died and suffocated because they were too busy playing these games. So, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, they're going to limit. They're going to force people to stop playing these games. And it's going to be implemented. It's going to be fully implemented sometime in 2006. And the story says fully operational in late 2006 or early 2006. I don't know if they meant to say early 2007, but the story says late or early 2006. So that's what I'm going to tell you. And it's going to be everything. It's massively multiplayer online role-playing games, as well as online casual games. So basically anything online that's gaming is going to be regulated by this system. And everything, you name the game, Legend of Mirror 2, World of Warcraft, Westward Journey Online, Fantasy, Westward Journey Online, Mu, JX Online, The World of Legend, First Myth Online, The Legend of Mirror 3G, Lineage 2, and Blade Online. So there we go, just to show you just how many online role-playing games there are out there that you guys have never heard of ever. And these are huge games. Like, you would not believe how big some of these games are, but they're only Chinese and Korean played. So, you know, it's interesting because the other thing is that all the farming, you know, people who farm gold and WoW gold, things like that, it's mostly done in China. And these guys play 24 hours a day. You know, these guys literally play the game for 12 hours at a time. And then they, you know, go to sleep and someone else starts playing for another 12 hours. And they just keep playing 24 hours a day. So I'm wondering how that's going to happen. I mean, what will end up happening is it's going to end up making a lot more money for these companies. People are going to have to buy multiple accounts because, from what I can guess, or at least unless there's some massive state-run system that you have to enter through a portal to get to your gaming that, you know, unless it actually is only one game per person as opposed to, or one account per person, I'm just wondering how this is going to work. If it's not that way, then people are just going to buy two or three accounts and just switch off. And by the way, after 5 hours, the accounts reset themselves. So you can play, I guess, 3 hours on one account and then 3 hours on another account, or play 5 hours and 5 hours and have two accounts. But after 5 hours, as I read before, the game gives you the lowest possible experience, whatever the heck that is. So I don't know. It's interesting. And it's going to be interesting. And there was even a little protest. I don't have the story right in front of me, but there was a little protest going on in China where about 1,000 people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're in communist China, you know, of millions of people playing, thousands, you know, start of people that are protesting. And people also are protesting in the game itself. And wow, that they don't want this to happen. So we will see. What else? The GameStop unveils Xbox 360 bundles as well as electronic boutiques. Yeah, I've been getting some people have been sending me. I was going to put this on the site, but I just didn't get a chance that, you know, there's these crazy, crazy bundles. You know, every year that these games come out, what happens is that electronics boutiques and GameStop, they don't want to sell you the system because, you know, they make a lot more money selling the games and all the peripherals. So when the game first comes out, you have to buy bundles. That's the only way you can usually buy these things, is that you have to buy, I mean, you can buy it without it, but it's pretty hard to find. So what you have to do is you have to not just buy the Xbox 360, you have to buy the Xbox 360, an extra controller, an extra, you know, memory unit, a replacement plan, and then like five games, things like that. So this way they, you know, they make a lot more money and they get you hooked. Now, in the past, these systems have been a little pricey. Well, now this year, they're not a little pricey. They're insanely pricey. In fact, there's one pre-order bundle, and this is just the Xbox core system, and it comes with five games, extra wired controller, memory card, and the product replacement plan, $700. And that's for the core system. Core stands for crappy system. That's right. So I don't understand it. Then you have the Xbox Silver Bundle, which is the premium edition of the console with five games, the wireless controller, the play and recharge kit, a rechargeable battery pack, and a one-year replacement plan. That's $800. I mean, these are pretty crazy. If you want to get the gold bundle, that was the silver bundle I described. The gold bundle is $900. There's the ultimate bundle, which comes with even more games. That's $1,200, but that's nothing. There was the Omega bundle. That was $2,000. That came with every single Xbox 360 game in the universe going to be released and everything you could ever want in the Xbox 360. In fact, it'll make your bed and serve you dinner. It's going to be so amazing. Oh, boy. And you can only get it online. If anyone buys that, you let me know, and I will interview you on the show. I swear to God, I will. If you buy the Omega bundle and can prove it to me, you send me the receipt, you send me a picture of you standing next to it, something like that, I will call you. We will talk, because I wanna find out who is crazy enough to spend $2,000 on the Xbox 360 Omega bundle. Okay, so there's my challenge out there. Huh. Auto Assault applies the brakes, and it's being pushed back to 2006. This was a game. This is another massively multiplayer game by NCSoft. It's been pushed pretty hard at E3. It was actually pushed extremely hard. There was this very cool band called The Mutator that was playing at E3. I actually wrote about them on my site, and a few other people. They were so cool. In fact, they had a show like every hour on the hour, and I think I went to pretty much every single show. I really loved them. I've talked to them. They were super cool. And this was the game they were pushing. This game was also on, it was actually also being displayed last year. It's a weird game. It's this weird massively multiplayer game with car combat. I'm actually in the beta, and I've been playing this game, and it definitely needs a lot of work. It's a very cool concept. And if you like creating things and crafting. The crafting system for this game is crazy. I mean, you can pretty much make everything is like craftable, and all your guns, everything's moddable. I mean, it's really amazing. One of the best crafting systems I've ever seen. But the graphics and just the sorting is insanely poor. It's very hard to check out your inventory, the actual city parts where you're running around. So there's sort of like the world part where you're in your car doing combat, and then there's sort of city parts where you're a human being or whatever you are, a mutant, or there's one other technology guys, and they're running around, and the graphics really need a lot of work. So it doesn't surprise me, because this game was supposed to come out this year. It really needs a lot more polish. It's supposed to come out in spring 2006. I could see it, but I think it's really going to need a big help in the graphics department for inventory, the animation. But it's pretty cool. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before. It's got that going for it. But it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. It's not too hard to get into the beta. It's an open beta. If you before you had a GameSpot account, it's not hard at all. I mean, at least I don't think it is. You can just sort of look around if you want to try to get into it. And I actually haven't played it in a while. I keep meaning to jump back in, but silly old WoW keeps stealing me away. Anyhow, Asheron Qual 2 has been silenced. That's right. Another one bites the dust. Asheron's Qual 2 is going to be canceling their service and closing down on December 30th, 2005. So, you know, it's pretty sad. It's like, so Asheron's Qual 2 is gone. City of Heroes, from what I've been hearing, is really taking a monster hit. Dark Age of Camelot's been folding up all their realms. The Matrix Online has cut their servers down to a third. You know, everything is dying. Oh, EverQuest 2 is begging people to come back, and they're giving them free weeks if they've canceled their accounts. And WoW is pretty much eating everybody up, and they are doing a great job of it. And not to get into, I've heard people complaining I talk about WoW too much, but I'll be honest, I talk about it because A, it is pretty much one of the biggest games of all time ever released in the history of gaming, and will be around now and pretty much forever. Two, it is a very good game that a lot of people are playing. And in three, it's constantly evolving. And four, I actually know a huge number of people at Blizzard, so I have a lot of insight on this game, and I've been playing it for years and years and years and years, since 2000, actually. So long story short is that, you know, WoW is, when it first launched, you know, they definitely had issues, but they're starting to get into their stride. I'm definitely seeing the new game. It's really coming along. The new patch comes out next week, 1.7, which comes out next Tuesday, and it adds a lot of very good content. It adds a huge new rage dungeon. It's going to add a whole bunch of new sets. There's a new Battlegrounds, which really is going to be excellent from what I've been hearing. I've been having issues with, I love Battlegrounds. I have issues with the other two. I don't know how I got into this, but I'll continue going since a lot if you do play WoW. The new Battlegrounds is excellent. It basically was built to prevent zerging. It's built so that it is going to be very difficult for one side to just take over, because there's all these different points in the map, so you really have to be very coordinated. And also, you can get honor no matter what. Whether you win or lose, you still get a fair amount of honor, which is one of the big issues I have with Warsong Gulf and a few others. Gulch is, I mean, Warsong is a very good map. It's basically captured a flag, but if you win, you get a lot of honor. If you lose, you get nothing. And a lot of people just farm Warsong over and over again. From what I know, they're going to be changing the honor system, so that can't be done anymore. So you guys might want to get in your honor farming as soon as possible. Asheron Valley, from what I hear, they're going down from instead of 30 to 40 people, it's going to be 20 to 30 people. And they're going to make it so level 60 guys all have to play together with each other, so you won't have level 60 guys kicking out the level 51 guys because they are useless. Things like that. Anyhow, long story short is that WoW is taking over the entire universe, and soon we all are going to be either orcs or humans. So, Nintendo will buy back 2.2 million shares, back to the news. So, why is this big news? Well, it's kind of interesting because Nintendo, there's been kind of rumblings for a while now that Nintendo might get bought out. And they're trying to prevent that. They're going to buy back. They're a public company. And what that means is if Microsoft came around and bought out enough shares and bought a couple million shares of Nintendo, they can own them. And if they own Nintendo, they could then just say, you know what, we're going to steal all your properties. We're going to release them for the Xbox. And no more Nintendo comes out. We just own everything, all your intellectual properties. And to be honest, that would not be a bad thing because Nintendo has probably more intellectual properties than anyone else. I mean, that's what they really own. I mean, they have Mario, they have Zelda, they have Metroid. I mean, they have Donkey Kong. I mean, they have so much. I mean, it's ridiculous how much they have. And if they got bought out, oh boy, that'd be scary. So they're trying to buy back some shares to prevent hostile takeover. And anyhow, that's it. That's the news on that one. The Wii Love Katamari is golden. That's right. The Katamari Damacy. For those of you who ever played this game and don't know what the heck I'm talking about, this was the breath of fresh air. It is an excellent game. It's $20. It's for the PlayStation 2. If you've never played this game, you should smack yourself in the face while you're listening to this. It is a crazy fun game. It is a perfect gateway game for those of you who have girlfriends who never play video games or boyfriends who never play video games. Yeah, right. Anyhow, this is the game you can get them hooked on. It's basically you're this little guy, the prince, that has to go to Earth and collect stuff. And you're rolling a ball. And whatever the ball touches that's small enough will stick to the ball. That's it. That's the game. And you start out and you're picking up things like thumbtacks and thimbles. And then eventually you're picking up larger things like playing cards and pieces of sushi. Then you're picking up things like, oh, cats and birds and humans and then cars and then houses and then buildings and skyscrapers and islands. And it gets crazy. And by the end, you're picking up the entire planet Earth. Very, very brilliant game. And the guy who actually did the game basically designed it like a game they used to do like 20 years ago. It was just him and a couple of programmers, and that's it. Anyhow, the sequel's coming out. It's called We Love Katamari, and it's being released by Electronic Arts. It's coming out September 20th, pretty soon. It's going to be $30. There's actually going to be a DS version planned, which I can't wait for. And I actually played this with Mike Shapiro in E3, and it is great. The main issue I had with the original Katamari Damacy is that there was only one real world level, and the multiplayer was sort of blah. It was okay, but it's always the same. Oh, and the other thing, Katamari Damacy has the best music ever, 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 period. So this one has very cool, there's a two-player cooperative mode, so you're each on the side of the Katamari ball pushing it, and I tell you, I did this with Mike, and he and I are sitting there screaming at each other, you push left, no, I push right, we're trying to move this ball through, like, you know, through the doorways, and, like, avoiding teachers around the school. It's great. I mean, that is what gaming and cooperative gaming is all about, and just playing in E3, I can tell this game is going to be a monster hit, maybe an underground hit, but a monster hit, a fun game to play. There's also a multiplayer mode where you have a battle mode where there's three different size Katamari balls that you can use to battle each other. I actually didn't play too much of the single player at E3. Oh, yeah, and the other thing is this was easily the best E3 demo I've ever played in my life. The entire demo was written for the E3 crowd. It had in jokes. It had the prince and the king ripping on you for being at E3. Oh my god, it was ripping on you if you didn't do well. He would tell you how poorly you did and embarrass you in front of other people watching you. That is what makes this game so good. Very excited for that. This game, World of Warcraft, oh my god, it's back. That's right, it has reached 4 million people. What have I been saying, everybody? For those of you who listen to my podcast and have been listening since the beginning, you all know I've been saying that their goal, Blizzard's goal, is that this game reaches 10 million people, and that will be the bare minimum. So 4 million people, big deal. They still got a way to go, and they still have a way to go, and it's going to reach 10 million. It's going to. I mean, they have over 1 million people in the U.S. and Canada alone. It's funny. I mean, you think about it, it's like, you know, EverQuest was always going on. They have 450,000 people playing. You know, they're the most popular game of all time, blah, blah, blah. And this game just came around and crushed it. I mean, it's just not even funny. It's kind of sad. And there's over 2 million people just in China alone. And wait until the... I mean, someone kind of leaked it. There's someone leaked that there's an expansion coming out. I just read that today. But yes, there is one coming out, from what I know. And, you know, it's probably now all over the internet since someone had, Blizzard actually said this about it, that, when it's, and they said, I think it was coming out in 2005, 2006, probably early 2006, but, it should be interesting. Xbox Live 2.0 dated and priced. That's my last story, by the way, for those of you keeping track. That's almost 40 minutes of news here. That's right. The Xbox Live has been dated and priced. Basically, it's going to cost, if you just want to do... There's Xbox Silver, which is what comes with the game. And it basically lets you access to the Live Marketplace, where you can buy things with micropayments. Yay! You can also download game trailers, demos, and episodic content. But then for online gaming, you have to get gold, pretty much. It's $8 or $7.99. I'm calling it $8. It's $8 if you want a 1 month subscription card for a 3 month option. It's $20. And if you want to have the 12 month subscription for gold, it's $50. So that's what it's going to cost you, fellas. And that's kind of what I said before is what it was going to cost you. So there you go. There's your news for the week. That was a lot of news. So let's get on to the next item. The Game Talk. Game Talk. This week's Game Talk, I'm going to be talking about Xbox 360 pricing. So this is crazy because let me tell you a little bit of insider stuff. So first of all, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, $299 is considered the sweet spot. That is considered approximately the most people will spend on a game system is $300 on initial launch. They really won't spend more than that. Because if you think about it, you have to get more than that. You have to not just get the game system. You have to get a memory card. You have to get a game. Okay, so the Xbox 360 games are $60. So I won't even get into that. Let's get into the bundles. So first, let's get into the bundles. So they have the core system, which is $299, and then the Xbox 360 is $399. So yes, now Microsoft can put in all their advertisements, and I guarantee this is what you're going to see. Xbox 360 starting at $299. And that's what you're going to see, starting at $299. And everyone's going to, you know, parents who see this that don't exactly know, they're going to think, oh, it's $299. But you know what? The Xbox 360 core system is crap. It is total crap. You have the Xbox 360 console. You have a wired controller. So, oh boy, you don't think your friends are going to rip on you for having the wired controller instead of the wireless controller. And, well, that's sort of it. Oh, and the standard AV cables. You know, in the era of HD, remember that's what everyone was talking about? So it does come with the hard drive, and that's sort of the big deal. So the hard drive, you need the hard drive. You can save games on it. You can do, you know, downloadable content. And if you want to buy the hard drive separately, it's a 20-gigabyte hard drive. It costs $100. So, I wonder what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the core console for $300 and then buy the hard drive, which I kind of need to do anything cool for $100. Or am I going to get the Xbox 360 main system? They don't even call it. It's just the Xbox 360 because that's the real system, which comes with the console, the hard drive, the wireless controller, the headset, the high-definition cables, of course, and the Ethernet cable and the remote control and all that fun stuff, of course. So wait, let's add this up. And I actually mentioned this somewhere, either in the forums or the podcast, not the podcast, on the site, is that, okay, so you have $400 for the Xbox 360, okay? Now, you're going to definitely need to get, what else? You'd have to actually get the game. So the game itself, games are $60 for the Xbox. By the way, there are some games that are being advertised for $50, and I'm quite sure that was Microsoft saying, oh yeah, we planned on this, we planned on everyone's going to love this, and we knew you guys were going to have some controversy, and then they secretly went back and said, okay, let's lower the price of the individual games to $50 because we're getting a ton of backlash from everyone. So anyhow, now, so the games will be $50/$60. So, okay, so that's $400 plus $60. And then you're going to need a rechargeable battery pack. So, or whatever. It's actually called the Play and Charge Kit, which is allows you to charge your battery. And then it allows you to actually plug a wire into your controller and attach it. So battery goes dead in your wireless controller, which is definitely going to happen because I have wireless headphones, things, wireless controllers, and they always go dead. So you have the wireless, so that's $20. You're going to need a second controller because, you know, if you have any friends or anybody, that's $50. So that's $50 plus 20, so that's $70 plus one game, so that's $60. So let's see what else. I'm just going through. We have the faceplate here. We have a hard drive. We have the memory unit. Well, if you get the hard drive, you don't need the memory unit. You have the wireless network adapter. Now, that's $100. You probably don't need that. You have the wireless controller. Okay, we have that. The regular controller is $40. The headset's $20. The remote control. So, you know, and then we'll add in tax. So instead of spending $400, you're spending somewhere between $550 to $600 to just get out the door and play with your Xbox 360. That is ridiculous. I mean, there's so much money. I think Xbox really shooting themselves in the foot with this one. But this is the crazy part. In the community, a lot of the developers thought that the Xbox 360 system was going to be $450. So this is actually a pleasant surprise that it was actually only $400 instead of $450. So let's go through why this is so stupid of a decision. I mean, there's a couple of things. The first thing is, so the hard drive, okay? Now, this is why you really, 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 really got to plan ahead, because if you're going to make something reverse technology compatible, you have to think and plan ahead. The Xbox itself was so cool. The Xbox had a hard drive in it. It had really great graphic cards, blah, blah, blah. Well, main thing is it had a hard drive. So what does that mean? That means that every single system of Xbox, the Xbox 360, the Xbox 3, 4, 5 is going to have a hard drive in it if it wants to be backwards compatible, because an Xbox game is going to be looking for that damn hard drive. But the problem is the hard drive is killing them, okay? Because of all their components, it is one of the few things that actually cost them some serious money. I mean, a hard drive isn't that expensive. A 20 gig hard drive maybe is $20, but you know what? That's a lot of money in console manufacturing, okay? That's a loss leader. And the Xbox, the regular Xbox, they were losing a lot of money. All these systems, I've had this discussion, yes, all systems when they first come out lose their manufacturer's money because it costs a lot. They obviously have to develop the system, and you know, they'll sell it for $300, but the system costs them $400 to make, and then they make the money on the games. But by the end of the life cycle, things, components go down, technologies improve, they make money on these systems. For instance, I know for a fact that the PlayStation 2, the new tinier version, that Sony makes a profit on this thing. Even if they knock the price down to $99, they still are going to make a profit on this thing. While the original Xbox, Microsoft to this day still loses money on this thing because they put in so many components. They put in so much stuff. They put in the hard drive. There's just so much in there, the power supply, things like that, that they could not scale down. So they're losing money. And they've lost well over $1 billion today on the Xbox system, which really also makes me wonder, why the heck are they doing this? I've said it before in the podcast. So Microsoft makes approximately $1 billion every 3 weeks in cash, okay? That's how much money this company makes. They make a huge amount of money. They can afford to lose for a while. But, you know, these people, the old folks, the old stogies who are making the decisions on how to sell and market the Xbox 360 are trying to make it sound like, oh, it's not just a game system, it's a home entertainment system, and it does so much. You can put your DVDs on it, and you can put your MP3s, and you can buy things and talk to people and do stuff, and it will make you dinner. And I've used that one before. I got to come up with something original. It'll make your bed. Did I use that one? I don't remember. Anyhow, they're trying to make it so it's so much more. So will you spend $400 in a game system? Probably not. Will you spend $400 on a multimedia entertainment system that does so many cool things? Maybe. So, I mean, that's the other thing, is that it's all marketing, it's all branding. But the thing is that Xbox, for these games to be backwards compatible on the Xbox 360, you have to buy the hard drive, which really makes it stupid, because the people that would buy the core system, the people who would buy the core system for $300 and then can't afford the $60 Xbox 360 games, but can afford the $10 to $15 used Xbox games and Halo and all the other games that are out for the Xbox, they will buy the core system. And you know what? They can't buy the core system because they need the hard drive. Again, I don't know who these marketing guys were, but this is so freaking dumb. I cannot believe it. I mean, this system, the core system, who would be marketed towards people who don't have to necessarily, you know, play the most up-to-date games and don't have a lot of money, can't even do that, okay? It defeats the whole purpose of the core system. It is beyond dumb, okay? Maybe they're thinking the people that are going to buy the core system are the same guys who buy the PlayStation 2 just to play Madden football, and that's it. And maybe they're right. Maybe I'm going to be completely surprised, but I don't think so. From what I've been reading and hearing, 80% of the orders that these that GameStop and all those companies are buying is the Xbox 360. They're not buying the core system. They're only buying the Xbox 360, up to 80 or 90%, okay? That's how big this game, you know, that's how much they're expecting this to sell. So I, you know, it's really, they're just doing it to say that they're selling it for $299. But everyone knows, I mean, everyone in the industry knows. It's also, I mean, people already didn't trust Microsoft. It really looked like they had everything, and, you know, all ducks in a row. They were really getting everything done. And then, bam, they do something stupid like this. They deceive the community. They deceive the developers. Everyone's upset with them. And on top of that, by not including the hard drive, no one's going to program for it. The Xbox 360, you always have to go with the lowest common denominator, okay? I've been programming for over 20 years, 25 years by now, and people will say, oh, you know, that's not true. Or so I've heard some people who are not programmers, obviously, they say, no, that's not true. You'll still program it. No, you won't, okay? You're going to do lowest common denominator, because that is what you have to do. Because if I program a game, assuming you have a hard drive, and you don't have a hard drive and you can't play my game, then you will not buy my game. Or worse yet, you will buy my game, you'll call the help support line, you'll yell at us, you'll never buy one of our games again, you'll go back and return the game, the you know, people in the electronics boutique and Toys R Us and stuff are going to be so pissed at my company, because all I'm getting is all these returns for this game, is that when I come out with a sequel or another game, they're not going to buy as many units because the first one was such a pain in the neck. So no, I guarantee they're not not going to be developing games assuming that you have a hard drive, or even using a hard drive in any way, shape, or form. So the hard drive is useless. I mean, okay, yeah, you can save games on it, and you can, I guess, download content, but that's it. I mean, no one's going to use the hard drive. And the whole thing is, don't even use the Xbox hard drive, okay? No one I know ever has filled it, an unmodded Xbox. Nobody, period. And it just was a complete waste. The other thing that will be interesting when the Xbox 3 comes out is, for those of you who use those little USB thumb drives, you know, those ones that hold sort of a, either like a gig of memory on them, and they're just little USB drives, you know, you plug them in, you can copy files on. I mean, I use it all the time. You know, using Moore's Law, and Moore's Law is that technology will double every 18 months. So right now we have 1 gigabyte thumb drives. That's what I use. And I've seen 2 gigabyte thumb drives are just about coming out right about now. So you figure in 4 to 5 years, the next Xbox will come out. So that's 2, 4, 8. So And that meant, so about thumb drives will either have 8 to 16 gigabytes on them by then. So you won't even need a hard drive. They'll just have these USB thumb drives. Everything will be stored in the static memory, and it's much faster. It's obviously, it's a heck of a lot cheaper, or will be by then. And also, what do you need all that memory for? Oh, so anyhow, long story short, this pricing really was not thought out very well. I'll be very curious to see what happens. I mean, obviously, Nintendo, Microsoft really wants to make money on this console. They're trying very hard. You know, they're still going to lose money on the console. That's the whole joke. And obviously, the pricing for the hard drive, $100 for a hard drive, for a 20 gig hard drive, you could buy a 200 gig hard drive for $100. I mean, they obviously are making it. They're going to make a ton of money on the hard drives. The controllers are $30 and $40. I guarantee you're going to be making money on that too. I mean, they really are obviously trying to make money on this thing. Now, that's not a bad thing. I mean, ooh, it's evil. They're trying to make money. No, that's not the point. They're not an evil company. Well, maybe they are a little evil, but they're not evil for trying to make money and trying to, you know, make the Xbox a successful unit. But the thing is that is evil is that, you know, they can't build up the expectations for this unit and deceive the public for so long without some karmic retribution. Ah, you guys know what I'm talking about. Oh boy, I'm going to get mail on this one. I can't even pronounce my own words. You know what they're going to get? They're going to get sacked for this one. Now, I might be wrong. I mean, maybe people are going to just forgive them and snatch up the Xbox, and it's going to sell 5 million copies in Christmas, and Microsoft's going to be going far and wide saying how amazing their Xbox 360 is and everyone loves it and blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's going to happen because I have a lot of friends who are going to get the PSP, and that was $300 when it first came out, and they waited. I have friends that still don't have it because, you know what, they saw it. They saw the release games, and they're like, you know what, I can wait. It's a lot of money, and they still don't have it, and I think that's going to happen now, especially when they start adding it up. I mean, $600, I mean, if you're a kid, forget it. I mean, and then for parents that are going to go, and they see the advertisements, and they think they're only going to go in and spend $300, and they start seeing how much it costs, and they have to add it all up, and they're realizing, you know, they don't even have a computer, and a new computer can be bought for this much money versus a game system. No, Timmy, you're not getting a game system. We're buying a new computer instead, or better yet, here's a book, okay? I don't know. I don't know who they're targeting for this. I mean, although the funny thing is I was going on about this with my wife, and she asked me, are you going to buy the system? And I looked at her and said, yeah, of course. I mean, what do you expect? I buy everything. Of course I'm going to buy it. And the difference is also I'm an adult. I have a job. I make money. I can afford the system, and I will buy. I'm not going to buy the Omega system, but I will buy, you know, buy the 360, the regular system. I'm not even going to buy a bundle. There's only a few games that I'm actually kind of interested in even that are coming out for it. There's the gun game, which looks really cool. It's going to be made. That's a Western game that's being made by the same guys who do the Tony Hawk series, and was it Neversoft. And there's also the what are the other games that are coming out? The Camino power game. That's the Rare game that's been in development for ever, but it kind of looks interesting. And well, that's kind of it. It's like the only games I'm pretty much interested in right now for the Xbox 360. So there we go. That's it for the Xbox 360 talk. I mean, there's a lot of people going on and on about this, but you know, just the inside information is that this was supposed to be $450 from what some people thought. So you know, some developers are kind of surprised that it actually was only $399. The other thing that'll be interesting is that I bet you Sony's PlayStation 3, when it comes out, I bet you first they're going to cut the cost of the PlayStation 2 to $99 on the same day that the Xbox 360 comes out. They're going to cut that price down to $99, which will be interesting because that's tempting. It's like, I can buy a 360 for $600 with everything that I need, or I can buy a PlayStation 2 for $100, and it's nice and tiny, and maybe they'll be smart and throw in an extra controller or a greatest hits game, and all these games that are just $20 for, and used ones are even less. I wonder which one I'm going to get. So, I don't know. We'll see. Spore talk. So, nothing really big this week. The good news is There's good news and bad news. The bad news is I'm having a little bit of difficulty getting in touch with some of the developers. That could either be A, they're all on vacation, which I think is true because it is August, or B, they're really, really busy trying to get out a new milestone of the game, and I think it's a little bit of both. So I've been trying to get in touch with some of my guys over there, but they've been kind of busy. It's also August, and it's sort of a dead time in the U.S. Well, it's the whole world. So after next week, I'll get back in touch with them and see what's going on with Spore right now. But it's getting up there. It's going to be interesting because Nightlife, the new Sims 2 expansion, comes out. It went gold today, so it's going to probably come. It comes out in a few weeks. I don't know. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I know it comes out, I think, in September, mid-September. So once that one comes out, they will announce the next one, because that's their dev cycle. They will announce the next expansion pack for The Sims 2. But I wouldn't be surprised if we hear a little tidbit about Spore coming up in the next month, right around when Sims 2 expansion pack comes out. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear something. Anyhow, so that's my quick take on that. Quick takes for those guys who listen to the show once in a while, or regular listeners out there. When I don't have enough to do a review, I'll do a quick take, because I feel that I should give you guys an honest review of the game. An honest review is where I play the game pretty much all the way through, or all the way through, and give you an honest opinion of what the game is. And a couple things. First of all, last week I reviewed Dungeon Siege 2, and I'm actually going to change. I gave it an 8 out of 10, which is a respectable rating, but I actually think I'm going to change my rating. I've actually never done this, but I'll tell you what happened is that my game that I was playing got messed up, and no matter what I tried to do, I'm not sure what the heck happened, because nothing ever gets messed up on my computer. Actually, what ended up happening is I uninstalled the game and reinstalled it into a different directory, and I don't know what the heck happened, and I could not get my save game, no matter what I did, to work. And the way Dungeon Siege works is that you only have one save file, and it just saves continuously wherever you are. You don't have multiple save files, so it's not like there's slots or anything, and you just continue playing. So it just picks up where you left off. And I did everything. I couldn't get it to work, so I actually started playing it again. I actually went from the beginning. I just finished up the first act again. And any game that is so good that you go back to continue to play after you've lost the save game, and I'm still having fun and seeing new things, that deserves a higher rating. And you know what? Yeah, the voiceover acting is so bad. Some of it's not bad. Some of it's okay, to be honest. And some of the writing is kind of funny. Some of the voice acting is atrocious beyond belief. And it's just sad, because I've done this. And you know what? And voice actors are not that expensive. It's not that hard to find professional voice actors that do a good job. And it's just such an easy thing to fix. When they come out with the expansion pack, which I know they're working on as we speak, please, anyone who's listening to this from Gas Powered, please, please make the voiceovers better in the expansion pack. Anyhow, I'm rating it a 9 out of 10. I'm actually changing my rating because that is, you know, this game, it has some downfalls, but when it comes down to it, I'm having a blast. I love playing it. It's a ton of fun, and that's what games are for. You know what? I've played games that have crappy graphics that I have a ton of fun with, and I've played games that have amazing, unbelievable graphics that are total crap, and this game has flaws, and it's not perfect, but damn, it is so much fun. I'm still playing it. I'm tempted to actually finish the game and keep playing it just to see what the veteran mode is like, and I can't think of too many games that control me that much, so this game gets a 9 out of 10. I'm reevaluating it, so ta-da. So for Planet Dungeon Siege, if you guys are listening, because I saw you guys made a link in about my podcast, very cool, thank you. You can change and update your rating, and you can even say why I did. So anyhow, I'm going to do two quick takes, and that's Advance Wars Dual Strike for the Nintendo DS and the 10 Dogs for the Nintendo DS. Both these games came out within a week of each other, and they are big, big games, and so big that Nintendo DS actually was reduced in price when these came out. And I'd say these are the first two must-buy games for the Nintendo DS. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Advance Wars, Advance Wars is made by Intelligent Systems, which is the same guys who do the Fire Emblem series, as well as the Mario Brothers. I can't remember the game, but it's such a damn good game. The name is escaping me. whatever, the Super Mario Brothers role-playing game, adventure game for the Game Boy Advance, Superstar Saga, there we go, my mind went blank, Superstar Saga, which I consider perhaps one of the greatest games ever made. It's fantastic, fantastic game, and they're doing the sequel, which I played at E3, it looks incredible as well. And these guys, there's one thing these guys know, they do some things so well. One, they write dialogue. I cannot believe how well these guys write dialogue. Their dialogue is absolutely fantastic. It's up there with BioWare. And what's really amazing is that, you know, I don't know if they have this is a Japanese company. I don't know if they have any English speakers. I mean, these games are originally made in Japan, and they're released in Japanese, but then they're translated into English. But all the slang in the games, all the colloquialisms, they're all correct. They're all English. They're all correct for the English market, which is unbelievably hard to do. I can count on one hand the number of games that successfully do this that are hardcore Japanese games that are translated into English. So too bad I don't read Japanese. I'd love to see if the scripts are exactly the same, because some of these games, they're so crazy and wacky. But anyhow, the Advanced Wars DS, two games came out beforehand. There was the Advanced Wars, the original game, which, FYI, came out actually on September 11th, 2001, FYI. And the Advanced Wars, the sequel, which had the Black Hole Army attacking you. And those came out for the Advanced, Game Boy Advance. And the basic the basic way these games are structured is super duper hardcore strategy. You have an overhead map of the world, and you can build different types of units. You have a commander that controls units that you build, and the whole purpose of the game is to, well, basically wipe out the other side, and that's sort of it. And, you know, there's different cost structures. There's so much strategy. I mean, I'll go through real quick. There's, like, infantry. I'm, like, looking at the units. There's infantry. There's mechs. There are recon units, tanks, medium tanks, neo tanks, mega tanks, APCs, artillery, rocket launchers, anti-aircraft guns, missile launchers, fighters, bombers, battle helicopters, transport helicopters, stealth fighters, battleships, cruisers, landers, submarines, black boats, and aircraft carriers. Whew. So there's a lot of stuff in this game. And every unit has, it's like an incredibly elaborate rock, paper, scissors. You know, every unit has its strengths and weaknesses. You know, like the infantry, they're super cheap, super weak, but they're the only ones that can really capture buildings. Actually, the mercs can too, because they have rocket launchers. You have, like, these recon units that are very quick units that are machine guns that can mow down infantry but are weak against everything else. You have things like fighters that are very strong but can not only attack other things in the air. You have things like bombers that can devastate ground units, but they're terrible in the air and they get wiped out very quickly by other air units. You have things like submarines, which can dive and totally hide, things like that. So the strategy is unbelievably deep. If you haven't played these games before and you like these type of strategy games already, you can probably see that you want to buy this game. And the gameplay from pretty much the first Advance Wars and the second and the third is exactly the same. You get what you pay for. If you played the first Advance Wars game, you've played this game. If you played the second one, you've played this game. Sort of. Okay, so the actual gameplay is exactly the same, and there's different variations. And when you first start playing the game, it very gradually teaches you how to play. And one of the big differences between this game and the other games is the other games really slowly showed you how to play. This game ramps it up a little bit. The missions are quicker, which I like. The old missions would take literally forever, hours sometime to win. They're much faster, better paced. The writing is really very funny, extremely well done. And there's tons of leaders. In the old game, there would be one or two leaders that would sort of joke with each other, and then three or four. This game, you have like 20 leaders, and they're all talking to each other, and they're all related, and they're ripping on each other. So it's very fun. I mean, just reading what they're saying to each other is quite a blast. Anyhow, the actual gameplay itself is, you know, you actually put on an island or area of the world, and you have to fight. And you have to beat the other person. You usually have to beat them by either capturing their base or destroying all their units. The more efficient you are, the better ranking you get. The more ranking you get, the more experience you get. You can then build up your leaders, and eventually, you know, you can add medals to them. You get special powers, things like that. And each leader has their ability. Some are better on the ground, some are better in the air, some have naval combat, some are better with artillery, things like that. So the game itself, I have to say, the one cool thing about this game, now, this is one of the reasons why I have issues with the Nintendo DS, and I'll tell you why. Some of you guys have heard this before. And my big issue with the Nintendo DS system is that the Nintendo DS has the touchscreen. And is that a big deal? Yes, it's a big deal because Nintendo is forcing every single person who makes a DS game to use the touchscreen. You have to use the touchscreen system. And you know what? I don't always want to use the damn touchscreen, okay? Games, not all games can use the touchscreen successfully. And I've seen too many games already that came out for the DS that you can tell these guys are making the game and they're like, ugh, and they got to figure out some wacky way to add the touchscreen into the game because Nintendo requires it, and they completely fail at it. And you can tell that this game was horribly compromised because of the damn touchscreen. Well, I love that Advance Wars, when you have a lot of power, you can play this entire game and never, ever, after you hit the start button, use the touchscreen. Ever. That's right. I play this game. There's no point. You never need to touch the screen. The entire game is played like you would play a normal Advance game, a Game Boy Advance game. And you know what? I wish more of these games were like this, to be honest. I can't believe that they got away with it, to be honest with you. So that's one of the big things I like about this game. It's like, thank God you're not forced to use the touchscreen. You can. You can use it throughout the whole game if you want, but you don't have to. And you know what? I don't want to use the touchscreen. I'm perfectly happy. It's all grid-based to like run around, select my units and move them and kill other people. So anyhow, the gameplay is, there's all these different modes, and that's sort of the game. I mean, you go around, you build up units, you have to build up your forces. Some, you know, every mission's different. It's sort of like Warcraft or Warcraft 3 in the sense that, you know, sometimes you have to build up your base from scratch. Sometimes you have to just capture key parts of your base. There's a main campaign that tells a cool story. There's a war room where you could actually fight different opponents. There's versus where you can battle up to four other people. And there's just so many different modes. There's a survival mode, which is this weird crazy mode where you basically have to use money or turn and time. And you have to clear maps using a certain amount of money, or turn-based. You only get a certain number of turns to play the game, or time. You only have a certain amount of time, like real time limit, which is pretty cool. They have this combat, which is the weirdest. I can't even describe it. Basically, you have this fast real-time combat where you get a pre-made amount of money and you can buy units, and each unit has strengths and weaknesses, and you're fighting in real time. It's kind of like the old Atari 2600 combat, but when your units die, they're dead forever, and you're trying to clear as many boards as possible. It's too hard to even explain. They have battle maps. They have history of everything you've ever done in the game. There's wireless play. You can build your own maps. It goes on forever. I mean, this game's got a lot of depth in it. There's so many things you can unlock, and this is a big, big game. It actually uses both screens perfectly. The top screen, because one of the things about these games is they have a lot of information, and it's really well done. The bottom screen actually has the combat. The top screen has all the tech information, all the stats of everyone. Very nice. I love that. You don't have to flip back and forth. This is a perfect use of the dual screens. And again, I have not played this game all the way through. If I tentatively gave it a review, an actual number, I'd probably give it an 8.5 out of 10. There's a few issues with this game, I would say. The first one is that this game is exactly, in many ways, although there's so many things, it's just like the other games, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but you know, there's a lot of cool stuff, but I kind of wish there was more new units. I kind of wish there was just a little bit more. There's some cool things. You could have two commanders fight, and then they put together their powers, and you can do really cool things. The other thing is the computer. It's actually it's not as hard as it used to be, but let me tell you, the computer is so freaking hard. I can't believe it. I mean, it is so unbelievably tough. I mean, I just sit there watching the computer, and I think I'm about to win, and you can be literally overwhelming the computer, and I don't know how it does it. It does exactly what it needs to do, and it comes back and kills you, and it is so annoying. And I'll be honest, actually, just a funny story is that when I was at Blizzard a few years ago, and we were playing Warcraft 3, and this was one before it came out, and I'm playing against, these are the guys who wrote the game, okay? These are the guys who actually wrote it and programmed it, and we were playing 4-on-4. So it's four humans against four computer players. And we got wiped out so quickly. These are the guys who wrote the damn game. They actually wrote the computer AI. And they're like, damn, we got to redo this. And we played 4-3. So there's four human players against three computer opponents. And we got our asses handed to us again. And they were like, okay, 4-2. Four humans against two computers. And finally we won. And these are the guys who designed and made the game. And we could barely win this game against two computer, and they're like, oh, the computer's so efficient, it just builds exactly what it needs perfect every time. So I mean, this is when even before it came out, so it's sort of like that. I mean, the computer does everything it needs to do perfectly. The other issue I'd say is that if you don't like these type of games, you will not like this game, period. I mean, you know, this game is so hardcore that if you do not like really hardcore strategy games, then you will not like this game. So again, if you had the first games, you probably want to buy this one, I'd say. And this is, you know, you probably already have it and you're probably already playing it. For those of you who have never played the Advanced Wars series or really like hardcore strategy or have the DS or just curious, the actual campaign is a lot easier. In the old games, the campaign was brutal. The campaign's a lot easier, a lot. And the other game, like the war, all the little sub-games, that's what's really hard. So this is actually a good learning game. If you've always been interested in the series, I'd say pick this one up and give it a try. So that's Advanced Wars. Now, Nintendogs, the big game. So, you know, a lot of people are very interested in this game. It was a gigantic seller in Japan. And it actually, the game, Wii came out, the DS outsold the PSP, and I think, was it the Game Boy or the PlayStation 2? That was it, combined, because it was such a monster game. And the whole purpose of the game is that you control a dog, and or you don't control a dog. You basically can have a virtual dog or up to three virtual dogs and play with them, and that's pretty much the whole game. This is the exact polar opposite of Advance Wars Dual Strike. Advance Wars Dual Strike, the entire game can be played without ever using the touchpad. This game, Nintendogs, the entire game has to be played using the touchpad. There is actually no other way to play the game. I don't even know if you ever even use the buttons. I mean, the whole game is played using the touchscreen. And this is an incredibly well-done game. If anything, just for the animation. I'm a dog lover. I've had seven dogs growing up in my life. So I love dogs. So I'm very interested in this game. And, you know, basically the game starts out, it uses the features of the DS extremely well. Something else the DS has is voice recognition, you know, microphone, and it does really good things. I mean, this is the polar opposite of what I just reviewed. When you first, you know, purchase the game, what happens is that you actually go to the shelter and you can look for a dog, and actually you can buy the dog that you like, and depending on what version you have, you get to select the sex of the dog, male, female, as well as, you know, what type of dog you want to get. If you have like Chihuahua and friends, you can either get, you know, they're all open up to you, the Chihuahua, the Boxer, Yorkshire Terrier, things like that. If you have Labs, friends, you can buy Toy Poodle, Labrador Retriever. There's six type of dogs for each version of the game. There's 18 total that can be eventually unlocked. Once you actually get your dog, then you actually have to name them, and then you actually have them recognize their name. You actually call into the microphone. So you say, like, Taffy, you know, you'll say, Taffy, Taffy, Taffy. You just keep saying it, and it'll recognize, the dog will recognize the name. And then you can also teach it tricks. You can say, sit. You actually talk into the game. You say, sit. It learns the tricks. So when the dog is playing, you can actually say, Taffy, and the dog will come to you. You can say, sit, and the dog will sit. Very cool. I mean, you know, from an interface standpoint, you know, even if this game really isn't a monster hit, this is definitely a turning point in video gamedom that people will be remembering from 10 years from now. They'll say, Nintendogs was the first game that really had full, you know, a full 3D interface, or whatever they're going to call it, or the full user interface that went outside the control scheme of just a touchpad. And there's other games. Seaman for the Dreamcast really actually did this before this, and Seaman was a freaking great, crazy game. And I have to say, if I did Seaman versus Nintendogs, I should have done Seaman in the retro review. I'd say Seaman actually blows Nintendogs away, because Seaman was so just freaking cool. And, you know, they should do Seaman for the Nintendo DS. That would be an excellent game. Anyhow, this game, you know, It's what it does. It does extremely successfully. If you want to play with virtual dogs, if you want to bring them out, have, you know, train them tricks, if you want to buy them supplies, if you want to buy them treats, you want to buy them toys, if you want to bring them into competitions, if you want to actually walk around the neighborhood and discover things and go to second-hand shops, if you actually want to play with other friends that also have it, this is the wireless capability. It's extremely well used. You can meet other dogs and play with them, and then eventually that's how you unlock dogs in your game. You can even have it in a barking mode, so if you're walking around with your Nintendo DS and it detects someone else who has a Nintendo DS, yours will bark. I tell you, I can't wait to bring this thing to E3 next year. I want to see it barking like crazy, because I bet you a billion people are going to be doing this. And, you know, it really uses Nintendo DS. But now, the one issue I have with this is there's no real game. I mean, you know, someone said this on the forums. It's like, what's the point of this? And that's sort of it. There is no point. I mean, it's just sort of, you know, you're playing with your dog, and it's sort of like The Sims, is that, you know, it's sort of, you have to have internal validation for this game. You know, there's no, I mean, there's sort of goals. I mean, I guess you can train the dog and teach it new tricks and buy new things. But again, that's sort of arbitrary. You don't have to do any of that. So, you know, the external validation, which is what 90% or 99% of most games are, is that you are driven towards goals. This game doesn't really have it. It's just sort of, you know, it's just sort of a simulator of dogs, and that's sort of it. An extremely realistic simulator that allows you to actually pet your dog and wash it and call it by its name and throw frisbees and enter competitions and do cool things like that. But there's no real game. I mean, it's just sort of, you know, it's sort of fun. It's like a Tamagotchi on steroids. But it's a fun game for what it is. I'll give you, I'm not going to give it a real review, because again, I've only been playing it for about a week now. You know, I would say for the interface, I would give the interface like a 9.5, almost a 10. I'd say this is one of the best interfaces I've ever seen for the Nintendo DS. And if you're going to use the Nintendo DS, this is how you do it. I mean, they really went to town on this. It uses everything. It uses the wireless. It uses the voice control. Oh, and that's the cool thing. When you're blowing bubbles, there's a bubble thing. You actually blow into the microphone, and by blowing in, it blows the bubbles out. I mean, this is really cool. I mean, just using the interface is about as much fun as the game itself. The animations too, very, very good. Again, it's like 9.5. I mean, almost 10, almost perfect. But be honest, the game itself, you know, it's like maybe a 7 out of 10. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's a good game, and it's definitely interesting. I just don't know how much shelf life it has. And it's, again, it's a Tamagotchi. I mean, there's no real purpose to it. And that's, again, why Seaman has a much better game, because there actually was a point, purpose, and it kept evolving, and things kept changing the game so much that it really drove you towards actually continue playing the game. Someone put out the game for the DS, please. Man, that is a cool game. I cannot wait to get the game tap just to get that game alone. That is such a fun game. Anyhow, retro review. So my retro review, I'm going to do two real quick. And I try to now do, for those of you who probably noticed this, I kind of try to do retro reviews that are in theme or similar to the actual games I review. So the ones I'm going to be doing is Military Madness and The Little Computer People. So for Advanced Wars Dual Strike, a lot of you guys who are thinking, oh, Advanced Wars, you know, the way Advanced Wars works, and actually I didn't even mention this, when you fight, one of the very cool things that happens is that each one of your units is actually representative of 10 units. So your tank is actually a column of 10 tanks, and say your infantry is 10 infantry. And when you actually fight, it zooms in on your units, and it shows them 10 versus 10, and they fight and they'll damage each other. So maybe if it's 10 tanks versus 10 infantry, I can tell you that the tanks will use their machine guns and probably wipe out 9. So there'll probably be 1 infantry left. If it's tanks versus tanks, and if the attacker is in the forest and the defender is on the desert, you know, the attacker has a big advantage with terrain, so maybe the attacker will lose 3 tanks and the defender will lose 6 tanks because they're in really bad terrain. And that's how it works. So it's sort of you sort of fight each other and it zooms in. And a couple of other games have been out that have done this. For the Genesis, there was a game called War Song, which is an excellent game, super hardcore. It actually makes the Advanced War games look easy. But that was an excellent, excellent game. And before that, the father of them all is Military Madness. that was pretty much the first one that I could ever remember that actually came up with this method of fighting that you see in Advanced Wars. Military Madness came out in 1989 for the TurboGrafx-16. I don't even know if some people might not even know what the heck that is. But when the Genesis came out with the 16-bit gaming, when 16-bit was a big deal, because Nintendo, the original Nintendo, was 8-bit, and this is 16-bit, and you can actually play games that look like the arcade. There's two. There was the Genesis, and there was the TurboGrafx-16. TurboGrafx-16 failed, because you probably haven't heard of it, but it had a couple of very, very good games. The Bonk was one, and Military Madness was one of the best. And I know a lot of people, including myself, who bought literally bought the TurboGrafx-16 just to play Military Madness. There was also actually a Neotopia, was that it? There was actually a game that was the Zelda killer on the TurboGrafx-16 that was actually better than Zelda. I know, bite my tongue, but it actually was. It was a fantastic game. I have it sitting at home. I forgot what it's called. Anyhow, Military Madness, just give you an idea. It was a turn-based game, war strategy game. It was set on the moon in the future, actually on April 6, 2089 to be exact. And basically the Earth is overcrowded and people are fighting on the moon, blah, blah, blah. It's good guys versus bad guys. There was 32 levels in total. They were split into 16 beginner levels and 16 advanced levels. The beginning of each level, you're shown a big map of the entire moonscape where the battles took place. And there was, of course, back then, you didn't save your games. Those of you who aren't aware of this, you actually had to write down code. So after you beat a game and got past that level, they would give you a 6-letter word. And then when you wanted to continue your game, you had to enter in the word. So that's how you continued the game. Whenever you did a battle, you would actually have units. It would, again, sounds familiar. You have things like tanks, soldiers, transport vehicles, jeeps, artillery, fighter planes, and bombers. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And again, this came out in 1989. This is an older game. And what you wanted to actually move your units, you can do two things. You can move or attack. And when you moved your unit, unlike Advanced Wars, which is on a hex, which is on a grid-like system, this is actually based on a honeycomb hex-based system. And you would actually zoom in, and it would be 8 men or machines versus the other 8 men or machines. Again, this is the difference, is that your columns and formations had 8 versus 8 as opposed to Advanced Wars, which is 10 versus 10, which has become sort of the de facto standard for these type of games. And there was a lot of things that affected the outcome of the skirmishes. You had the whatever. This is actually slightly different. The nearby units could actually lend support. So if you had units that were closer to yours, your units were stronger. Terrain, huge effect on combat in both games. Terrain is a big deal. And there was also these things called surrounding effects. And again, just like Advanced Wars, if your guy was knocked down all the way down to just one unit, you could replenish them. You would actually have to bring them to a factory, and they could get healed back up to 8 units and go back out. And how you can win the game: you destroy all your enemy units or you capture the base. Again, sounds familiar. This is a really, really good game. I actually have still played it once in a while, and it actually really, really plays well to this day. It's not as hard as Advanced Wars by far, but it's still pretty tough. And this game actually came out, for those of you who are interested in this game and those of you who really like Advanced Wars, this game did come out for the PlayStation. It was called it was Nectris Military Madness. It came out in February 17th, 1999. It actually, unfortunately, looks exactly the same, even though it came out 10 years after the TurboGrafx version. But there's over 100 levels in it. It has the exact same gameplay, so you don't have to go out and get a TurboGrafx, although I'm sure you can find this game if you look hard enough and play it online. Or you can go out and go to GameStop, or you can go find this game used, I'm sure, for like $3 or $5 if you're interested. So for those of you who really can't get enough of Advanced Wars and want to kind of see where this all came from and see the history of this genre of gaming, check out Military Madness. Either, find it online or buy the PlayStation 1 version and enjoy. The other retro review I am going to give is The Little Computer People for the PC. Now, again, I kind of like going back to the original games. Those of you, people probably heard about this game. I actually remember buying this game and playing it. Yes, this game came out September of 1985, 20 years ago. Damn, I am old. But I bought this game for my Atari 2+. Yes, right. Oh, my Atari. Ugh. My Apple II Plus, my Atari. I didn't have an Atari. Apple II Plus computer system. It's actually, the full name is the Little Computer People Discovery Kit. And it was made by Activision. Now, those of you who play The Sims or Tamagotchi or any of those type of games, this is pretty much the father of all those games. The Sims was actually loosely based on this. Those of you who are super duper Sims fans out there, and I know there's a lot that listen to this podcast, you probably have heard of this game. So I'll go into basically what it was. It was a very different game than The Sims, and The Sims is actually sort of like a real-world simulation, and you're controlling your guys. This is not. This actually is the little computer people that live inside your computer. That's why it's called the little computer people, and they're almost like your pets. And you load up the game, and an actual house appears, and it's a 2.5-story house. There's a kitchen and a living room on the bottom floor, and in the kitchen there was a place for water. There was actually a stove, a sink, a fridge, a window. The den had a door. There was a fireplace and a couch, and there was where your pet can sit. On the second floor, there was your bedroom, which had a dresser. Again, sounds familiar, Sims fans out there. There was the bathroom. And there was also a little den or rec area that had a computer, chess set, clock. And then in the attic, which had a piano, it had sort of a lounge area, had files, it had a record player, that's right. Way before CDs, guys, they had a record player in this game, a television set, and a lounge chair. And what would basically happen is that you would control your little computer person. You'd come in, and it was just like Tamagotchi. You'd have to feed him. If you didn't feed him, he would die. You had to give him water. And what you would actually do is that the little computer person would walk around and do little things. Like, he would actually play the piano, he'd listen to records, and he'd actually listen to fun things like Ghostbusters. Yes, 1985, fellas. Ghostbusters. Yes, so you'd hear things like Ghostbusters or Masters of the Lamps, all these crazy tunes. And he would do this on his own. You could actually call him. You can actually type in. And how it worked, how you controlled him, because there was no mice back then, you would actually have to type in and say what you wanted to do. The game would save because it was for the PC. And you would actually say, give him a call, or call computer or LCP. Call a little computer person. The phone would ring. He would talk to you in gibberish, a.k.a. sim talk, for those of you guys out there. You could actually ask him to write you a letter. And that's how he would communicate with you. And he would sit down in front of his typewriter computer and actually write you a letter, a real letter inside of a typewriter. And it would say things like, "Dear friend, I must say how pleased I am with my new home. The dog is really man's best friend. Maybe I'll teach him a few tricks. Yours truly, Adam." And that was the guy's name. The little computer person was Adam. He had a dog, and he would play with him and do little tricks with him. And there was other cool things. You can play games with him. If you asked to play a game, you can play poker with him, and they had anting and everything. There was a couple of other card games you can play with him. You would take showers, he would do exercise, he would drink water, he would actually read a book, he'd read the newspaper, lots of cool things. And, you know, again, it's very much like The Sims. This game, in some ways, is kind of more fun, and not The Sims isn't fun, don't get me wrong, but it was kind of cool because it was a little computer person living inside your computer. It was a totally different interface. It was not like, you know, like, it's the real world. Like, The Sims is actually, you know, takes place in the real world, and you can do so much more. But this was actually kind of nice in that it was like inside your computer, and this little guy lived in there, and you'd have him sort of doing stuff. And I can only imagine if they remade this game now, just how freaking cool that would be. There's just all these things that can do, and things he could find in your computer, or maybe he would like poke in your email and take things out and talk to you about them. Oh man, I can only imagine. But, you know, if you could find this game, I would definitely check it out for nostalgia value. It was a very, very influential game. It's one of those games that was so strange and weird. It really had a big impact on me. I still remember to this day sitting there playing this game, I can't imagine. I can't think of too many games. Well, that's not true. I can think of a lot of games I used to play back then, but this one really had a big impact on me and had a big impact on other people, like, oh, I don't know, Mr. Will Wright, who has talked about it and said that he's built The Sims and it was based on this game. But again, this is really, again, the grandfather of all these Sim-type games. Even Spore is loosely going to be based on this because this was the first one that did it, and it's an excellent game. Name That Game. Okay, those of you who don't know Name That Game, every single week or every time I do this podcast, I play a video game snippet, and you guys have to tell me what is the video game snippet, what is the name of the game, what system it's for, and I will select one winner at random, and the person who gets it correct and gets chosen and writes me that next week will, or when you hear the podcast before the next one, you will get a big prize. I've given out some cool stylus I had for the Nintendo DS that had little Mario Kart on it. I've given out a 10 dog keychain, which is super cool. This week I'm giving out I actually have the City of Heroes cape that I got at E3. I used to get gift certificates, but I'm giving out swag because you guys seem to like swag. So I'm giving out the swag I get from E3. And let's listen to what this week's entry was, okay? Let's listen to it. So that was Metroid Prime for the GameCube. Some of you actually asked if, some actually most of you wrote in saying that was Metroid Prime or Metroid Prime 2. And the winner for this is Rusty, who got this correct. Metroid Prime for the GameCube. I love the show. I hope I win. See ya. Do not disturb as of November 9th. I have no idea what that means. Rusty, you have won the very cool cape. Please write to me and claim your prize. I need your address, and I will send it to you. So here's this week's entry. Once again, send me an email to game@gamingsteve.com, or you can also send me a message on the message boards and just tell me your name and the name of the game and the platform. So let's listen to this week, shall we? Okay, that's not so bad. Let's listen to it one more time. Okay, so real quick, because this is going super long and I need to get out of here, let's go to some mail. I got one piece of mail from Dustin Solis. He wrote, since you seem to know a lot of people at Blizzard, I figured to ask this question. I just noticed another patch for StarCraft was just released. I think even a Diablo 2 patch was released recently. These games came out a long, long time ago. I never heard of a developer still actively working a title that was in stores a long time ago. I figure they would stay working on a game for a year or most and then let it fall by the wayside. Why are they spending resources on this instead of focusing on newer games? Actually, it's an interesting question. The main reason is because StarCraft is perhaps one of the most popular video games in the entire world, and it is still being played actively. There are people in Korea that play StarCraft religiously. It is a sport in Korea. You can actually go to Korea. There's two television stations that show StarCraft tournaments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In high schools, there are StarCraft teams. It is actually a team sport, and you can be on it and get a varsity letter just like you can in football. It is a huge, huge phenomenon. That is why they keep releasing patches and will continue releasing patches forever. Diablo 2, same thing. Diablo 2 is still actively played quite a bit. So they're actively, you know, and you know what? They get so much press and prestige and so much props for releasing these patches years after these games have came out. And it's a big deal. And it really doesn't take a lot. The way they Blizzard programs their games, they have basically huge spreadsheets that keeps track of all this stuff, and when they release these updates, which are usually balancing issues, they just change the spreadsheet and that's it, and then changes the units slightly, and that's how. It's very easy for them to do these updates, so they're not spending a lot of resources on it. So there's your answer. And you know, anyhow, that's your answer. And I have another question from Simon. He wrote, "Hey Steve, I was looking back to the games Maxis has created, and I realized I forgot about the SimCity series. Surprisingly, it's one of my all-time favorite games. I bought SimCity 4 the first day it was released. I bought The Sims 2 the first day it was released, and probably do the same with Spore. Basically, blah blah blah. Can you talk a little bit about SimCity 4 and what you think the future of cities is? You think it's going to be, you know, part of Spore? Blah blah blah." So anyhow, thanks very much, Matt. And SimCity. Yeah, the SimCity franchise is interesting because it's successful. Don't get me wrong. Like, SimCity is one of the most popular franchises of all time. But the big issue with SimCity is that it just does not have the power of money that, quite frankly, The Sims has. The Sims has new expansion packs that come out every 6 months. The amount of money that EA makes off The Sims is staggering because people buy it religiously, and those expansion packs are expensive. These aren't $19.99 expansion packs. These are $34.99 expansion packs. So people will spend $70 a year on The Sims 2 expansion packs. Spore, they'll probably start doing the same thing, and what's even more interesting about Spore is they're going to actually be able to do it over online. They'll also release them in stores, but you'll be able to buy these things online for instant gratification, whether it's new abilities or new structures or new items you can add to your creature, things like that, or new races, whatever. You will be able to do this for that. With the SimCity series, it has limited expansibility. So you can buy it, and maybe there'll be one expansion pack for it, but that's sort of it. They, of course, will never let the series die. There will be a SimCity 5,000, whatever they're going to call it, and there will be new games. They always will come out because people love this game, and the people who buy these games will continue to buy them. However, the new version of SimCity, if I go through the dev cycle, let's see, they have The Sims 2 just came out, and then comes a few of those expansions, then Spore is going to be the new one. So what will come after that is probably, and then some Spore expansion packs, will be the new SimCity. So expect to see SimCity 5 coming out after Spore has been out for a while. So that's probably another 2.5-3 years. And then look for The Sims 3. So, and that'll probably be a perpetual cycle forever and ever. So there's your answer on SimCity. It's not going to be forgotten. Trust me, it's a big series, but it just really does not have the money power. You know, maybe they'll figure out a way to come out with the perpetual expansion packs for that. I think they probably will. Anyhow, there we go. That's my answer. That's what I think. Final thoughts, real quick, because I'm running out of time here. I got to go. Final thoughts. Oh, yes, games. So September, we're starting to see some really, really big games come out. There's quite a bit. There's a couple of really cool ones. Serious Sam 2 is really looking awesome. I like the shooter games. This one really looks like a lot of fun. I'm quite looking forward to it. The more I see of it, the more I'm looking forward to playing it. I just hope it's not too hard. There's quite a few games that are coming out in September. A lot of good games coming out in October. In fact, there's just going to be too many games. So I got to go and finish up Dungeon Siege 2 again and finish up WoW and play a few more Advanced War games and go feed my Nintendog. So I will talk to you guys next week. Oh, yeah, I forgot one thing. The prize. Oh, my God, I'm so bad. Sorry. Before I go, the Name That Game prize this week is going to be another Nintendo Dog keychain. That's right, a little Nintendo keychain. So for those of you who get the answer right, or that one of you, I will send you a nice little fun keychain. It's a cool little Nintendo Dog. Anyhow, I will talk to you guys later. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and I'll speak to you guys later. Bye.